Welcome to Thursday Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. My name is Jesse Ott, the host of this podcast, which is all about beverage innovation. I talk with innovation pioneers from agriculture to glass. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe to be notified of all new episodes.
Hello, everybody. I am Jesse Ott with Thursday Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I have the Silk Road crew here. We've got Yannick and Keaton. Welcome. Welcome to Thursday Thursdays.
Hi, thanks for having us. Hello, Jesse. Thank you for having us.
Awesome. I'm so excited. So where are you guys calling from right now?
Today we're in Orlando, Florida. It's one of our two main offices. We also have one in Houston, Texas.
Okay, nice. Okay. Well, both good states.
Absolutely.
Of course, I live in both, so I have to say something like that.
Right, you're actually just like right up the road from us.
Yeah, pretty close. I didn't realize it was quite that close, but yeah, I'm going to have to swing by and say hi to you guys sometime.
And, absolutely. One of the most interesting things about these two states is it's like number two and number four wine consuming states in the nation.
Yeah. There's a lot of people on the restaurants and gastronomy and whatnot too. I mean, you had in Dallas and Texas, you have so many big cities too. You know, in Houston, it's just huge.
Like four of the top 10 most populated cities in the whole country in Texas.
Yeah.
You got Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio, all huge cities, populations.
Yeah. As long as the state of California, the people of California keep moving there, who knows how big they're going to get. Anyways.
The main thing is that they all love our wine, so we're doing really well in Texas.
No, that's great. I can't wait to try them. Where were you born?
So I was born in the Tbilisi, which is a capital city in Georgia. And my mom was visiting her sister, who came here with her husband through work visa. And she met my stepfather. They fell in love. And and then after getting all their immigration things, all the process of getting green card and everything, then I arrived to the United States when I was just turned 14 years old. So I went to.
Oh wow! So formative years.
So I went to high school here, then went to University of Florida, and I ended up studying food and resource economics. So it was kind of interesting connection there. I didn't think I was going to work with food or anything like that, but it just so happened. A few years later, I joined the Army. It was kind of a thing that was always in my heart, but I wanted to do something to show my respect and gratitude to this country, because it gave me a new home, gave me everything to be successful. And I wanted to also show my kids that, that I care about this country and I'm willing to sign and on the dotted line to protect it.
That's awesome. Thank you for your service. Which branch did you go into?
I serve in the U.S. Army.
Okay.
I was in the 82nd Airborne Unit. And in 2012, we deployed to Afghanistan, at which time my wife, instead of just staying at home by herself with the 6-month-old, she moved to Orlando, Florida, and to stay with her parents. And she got a job at the same time that kind of changed everything. So halfway through my deployment in Afghanistan, she said she loved living in Orlando and she wanted to stay here. So we went to Plan B, and at that point, I put my packet in to leave active duty, but I transitioned into Florida National Guard. I worked there for a few years, and now I'm in the Federal Army Reserves. So So still in. I got 14 years and 6 years left to retirement.
Nice. That's awesome. Congratulations. That's really cool. So where did you first move into the United States then?
Florida. I was West Palm Beach, and then next year we moved to Vero Beach. So I'm kind of stayed in Florida most of my life, except when I was at Fort Bragg. Now I think they call it Fort Liberty now, in North Carolina.
Okay. Nice. All right. Very good. So so you're in Orlando, you come back, and then what happens?
And then so this, you know, the coming back from Afghanistan, I had to do something more fun and something lighter and something that would make me happy. And that's where I'm like, you know, this opportunity came where our family friend was supposed to import Georgian wine, but got through some process. But then he going back and forth to Georgia, he just stayed in Georgia. It's one of those things is a lot of people that go to Georgia, sometimes you just like buy a winery or do something else. There's quite a few foreigners that fell in love with Georgian wine and started wineries in Georgia. Maybe someday I might do that as well. but I wanted something more fun. And, this kind of, was in my heart to share this wonderful culture of Georgian wine, share it with people. Cause, you know, I'd still talk and, you know, sometimes present Georgian wine to friends and family, and that they would always love it. So I'm like, you know, this is something that is much it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm definitely going to enjoy it. So I needed something to do that was a little opposite of spending time in Afghanistan.
Understand. Yeah, completely. Okay, so you started kind of on accident, I guess, kind of getting into, you know, or selling it by hand and friends and family. And then you just kind of decided that that was a route that you wanted to invest in.
Yeah. So, you know, my first goal was after I left the active duty was to go get my, continue my education. So I enrolled at Rollins College in their MBA program. And, at the same time, I started the wine importing business, and I focused my entire MBA on this venture. So I had a lot of friends from my professors, my team members, classmates. They helped with tasting the wines that I brought in. They participated.
Nice.
Yeah.
They're so kind to, and generous to donate their time to good tasting.
Yeah. So I had quite a lot of help in this process. And one of my courses I had to join that required us to volunteer. And I joined an organization called SCORE. And if you haven't heard or people don't know about it and they want to start their own business, SCORE is actually one of the best volunteer groups of mostly retired executives and people with a lot of knowledge and experience that just want to help other people succeed in starting their business, and they share and help them kind of along. My role was actually helping in that with their IT and web support. So I was their person, but I met a lot of great people that also were good mentors to me, introduced me to a few people that helped open the doors. One of the VPs of marketing of Olive Garden, Gopal, was volunteering there at that time. And his friend is George Miliotis. And I don't know if you know that name, but it's a big name in the industry. He's like one of the biggest master sommeliers in the world, top master sommeliers in the world. And he worked for Darden Group at that time. So I came to him and had him try my wines, and he gave me the feedback and helped me choose the right wines for the market. And you know, ever since, you know, now there's a wine bar, George, in Orlando, Florida. So he's got his own bar, and I still go to him and help him choose my wines. And he actually carries our Quivery wines and in his restaurant.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. So he kind of helped you figure out which ones were the best for the American palates, I guess.
And making, you know, choosing the best quality wines, because I wanted to make sure.
Best quality, yeah. Yeah, well, that's awesome. So he's kind of a mentor. Do you have other mentors that have kind of helped you in the space?
Yeah.
That you want to mention?
Lois Perry. She's actually a marketing she was a marketing person for developing Chuck E. Cheese's brand. She's been great mentor. Back then she was in the running that Orlando score she was group, and there's so many people there along the way. One of the interesting ones is I was introduced to Doug Howell, who's also has 40 years of experience in this industry, and he helped me with my first sales and back then. And now we went full circle. 9 years later, he joined our team, and he's very happy to be here with us and helping, you know,
yay,
grow.
That's fantastic. I didn't realize he knew you guys for so long. That's awesome.
Yeah, I met him about 2014. So,
okay. Early on then, right at the right time to get some good advice.
Absolutely.
What about any resources or anything you want to mention that, you know, have kind of helped you on your journey, whether it be, you know, business or personal or, you know, organizational skills or any podcasts or anything that you listen to that kind of helped you along the way?
I've been an entrepreneur, so that kind of helped. Knowing how to run a business, how to do basic things with the businesses, and that kind of, you know, you have to be a self-starter and self-motivated to be an entrepreneur. So that experience has been crucial. I've read a lot of books, especially, you know, some of the self-development books, you know, Dale Carnegie books are great. Anything that kind of raises you from the inside, because I think, you know, one of the things I love about Georgian wine is it's pure in heart, in the sense that it carries. Through the tradition, it carries a lot of history and a lot of connection between people, because the supras are way of celebrating friends, God, family, peace, you name it. And in every single glass of wine that is drunk, pretty much every single person says a toast during the dinner, and that which is called the supra in Georgian. So imagine this like never ending feast of wine drinking and toasting. And that's kind of the beauty that I wanted to share with the people here is bring that love. And that's it. That's one of the important things is to have that, not just in a glass of wine, you have to have it inside of you because you have to speak from your heart with this, with each toast that you say. It's not, you know, you don't write your toast ahead of time and then read it because it doesn't sound sincere and it's not, it doesn't come across like that. So, developing yourself, you know, to respect people, to understand, you know, how to be kind, how to be professional is important. Time management is crucial. So I always try to see what I can do to help optimize my time. Sleep is important. Just knowing how to sleep right, because then, you know, your productivity is very dependent on the proper rest and proper sleep. So there's, you know, our self-development is kind of never ending. And through the military, I had to constantly get educated as I promoted through the ranks. You know, I was a company commander leading 200 soldiers in my unit, which is huge responsibility and a lot of work to care for that many people. And military is really good about developing leaders and constant education. So now I'm actually going through my ILE course, which is intermediate level education, to be promoted to lieutenant colonel.
Nice.
Yeah. I can't wait.
Yeah. Congratulations.
That's something that's, the type of education that a lot of people don't get. They don't see
right.
or experience.
No, not at all. Not at all. Even in the corporate world, I mean, doesn't really exist. I mean, it does in some companies, but like, you know, they're traditional, you know, kind of, I would say old school companies. It's part of their curriculum or part of their leadership, you know, programs. But yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad that you're able to take advantage of that and you're excited about it and want to continue to grow and be educated. I love to learn. I'll never stop learning. It brightens your day. I guess I'm a nerd, but yeah, I just love learning whatever it is, whatever I'm into that day. Today it's Georgian wines, which is amazing, and loving every second of it.
It's a good thing to be into today.
It is, yeah, it's fun. I'm excited to see you guys grow. Some of your pain points that you want to talk about that you've experienced in this industry?
Well, this is one of the toughest businesses I've ever had. It's so hard to get into restaurants or stores, especially when, you know, I was a one-man show. I carried 10 different hats, marketing, sales, web design, you name it. That was it. Having enough time to do everything in a day. But I think that one of the challenging things is not having relationships with the people, you know, people that are usually in the wine industry. Have been doing it for a while. So they're knocking on the doors, they're bringing products, whether it's new this wine or that wine. So the buyers, you know, they kind of have some rapport already. So breaking into it was very difficult. And then, like I said, once we grew, which was kind of a big thing for us. The person that my wife decided to stay and work in Florida was Barry Greer, and he actually sold his business, and we invited him and his wife to travel to Georgia with us, at which point he fell in love with Georgia with his wife and fell in love with the wine, and they're like, we want to join their business. So, you know, the Georgia people. So Barry helped kind of grow this operation to the next level, invested a lot of money into growing this brand, promoting Georgian wine, bringing, you know, talent, helping bring that talent together. So, and then, like I said, you know, he had connections to Universal Studios because he used to work with them. We had that meeting. We loved the wine, and then the COVID kind of set us back. You know, we kind of kept fighting. We're persistent, and that's one of the things that helped us kind of get through. We got into ABC, then we by sheer luck got into HEB, then we got into Specs. And then we actually also got into Kroger, the first Kroger in Texas.
Oh, nice.
And I mean, Kroger is a big big deal, because if we go nationwide with them, it's going to be probably the biggest thing. That's my dream. And we got about it. There's another big chain in Illinois, Benny's. So we're spreading, expanding everywhere. But it wasn't easy. Yeah, it was. Every step took a lot of work to get through different challenges, and just opening those doors.
Yeah. A lot of relationships and stories and meeting people where they were. I mean, a lot of it has been like creating a market that doesn't exist. Georgian wine wasn't even readily exported to the U.S. until the mid-aughts, right? Like,
yeah, it wasn't a big market. I mean, there's been, Georgian restaurants that popped mostly like in New York. You know, there were maybe Miami, California, where they would have Georgian wine in, but it wasn't that big. Started getting more and more popular, I think, in the last, the big thing that really promoted the expansion of Georgian wine was the 2006 embargo that Russia put on Georgia, and almost single-handedly destroyed the wine industry in Georgia, which at the same time is also a benefit.
So right, it also kind of saved it.
Yeah, it saved it because now they increased their quality of wine. They focused on their ancestral wines, and they, you know, started to work more on with the United States and the Europe. So that, you know, it was benefit as well to, and
that's great.
Yeah.
So Russia had put a big embargo on Georgia in order to manipulate and control them. And then Georgian winemakers said, no, we're not doing this, but we obviously can't be solely dependent on Russia, which is where 75% of their exports were going in terms of wine. So now, only within the last 20 years, have we seen Georgian winemakers really make an effort to be a part of the Western wine conversation, which is why it hasn't really been prevalent up until recently. But it's going very, very fast.
Yeah, it didn't help in 2008, Russia attacked Georgia, and even to this day, they occupy 20% of Georgian land, which, you know, is not a big country to start with, but...
Right, about the size of West Virginia, the whole country.
Yeah, it's not very big.
But really diverse climate.
Yeah, very diverse climate, because you have the Black Sea on one end, you have the mountains on the basically on both sides of north and south of Georgia, which kind of create unique climates. You see the map of Georgia, and then it's located in I think it's a very interesting story that I have to share with you. So since a lot of people don't know where Georgia is,
okay,
but most people know Noah was and where Noah's Ark landed. Believe it or not, it was actually on Mount Ararat, which is on the southern side of Georgia, between Georgia and Armenia, basically. So, and when Noah's Ark landed, one of the first things he did, he planted a vineyard. And roughly, if you look at math-wise, it was probably about 10,000 years ago. So that winemaking process might have been started by him. And to this day, Georgia is actually, in Georgian language, is called Sakartvelo, which stands, which is named after Noah's great, 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 great son, whose name was Kartlos. So that's an interesting thing. So yeah, in case people wonder, yeah, where Georgia is.
Very interesting.
Yeah. And then there's a lot of stories that kind of you've heard of, you know, the Golden Fleece and other things that are about Georgia, but people, it's not.
They haven't had great PR until recently.
Right.
No, but that was really interesting. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the story of wine, right? I mean, that's the beauty of the wine industry is that there's a story behind every bottle. You know? So what is your outlook then for 2024?
Yeah, we've looked at the numbers and we're basically doubling our sales every year. And we think we're going to double again next year. And nice. Maybe even potentially quick. We'll see. There's a lot of things kind of opening and developing. And I feel like we're at that pinnacle where Georgian wine is about to really take over and become mainstream. Mm-hmm. You know, we started selling wine in ABC in Florida 3 years ago, just about. And we planted that seed and our sales were a couple of cases per month. And then it went up and up and up and that seed is growing and developing. And I think, more and more things that we do with the food and wine festivals all over the state, they kind of educate the people. And now, we're getting orders every month, last 4 months with the ABC. So somebody's drinking it, somebody's enjoying it, and it's getting bigger. So,
yeah. We also only launched our online platform in August. So we've only been available for not just going into the retail outlet, but ordering directly for, I guess, about 4 or 5 months now. And we've seen a massive spike over the last couple of months of growth of people coming and noticing what's going on there. So that's very exciting.
Cool. Yeah. Congratulations. That's exciting. It's a whole new outlet for you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now we're available pretty much nationwide, except in a few states.
That's wow! I didn't know you guys were that distributed. So that's fantastic. Yeah, you guys are ready to you're prime for the next level stuff. That's super exciting. Congratulations. The proof is in the bottle, isn't it? Right. So it's you're turning heads. You're converting people over. I mean, again, yes, it's the stories and the quality. And I think that those two go hand in hand. And now you've got a great team and a lot of support and got the right people in place to really kind of make things happen. So I'm super excited to see what happens in 2024. I will have to keep in touch. And if you have Do you want to come on and do any product releases? That's something I'm going to try and work on for 24, is to do any line extensions. I know you kind of mentioned them today. If you want to go come on and taste them, it's just a 10-15 minute segment. We'll do it really quick. So people can kind of come here when there's something new, they can come to Thursday Thursdays, and they know that there's new products, you know, they're learning about something different and innovation, and then line extensions too. So you guys fit all those categories. So, you know, keep me in mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, I just wanted to throw in something really quick. For a few things for your listeners to be on the lookout for as we're moving into this next year, we actually have several promotions that are going to be available on our website that we'd love for people to check out. One of them is we're going to do a sweet indulgent semi-sweet packaging.
Okay.
That we're currently meeting with a chocolatier to pair our wine specifically curated with a collection of artisanal chocolates, made from Venezuelan chocolate. So I think that's going to be really, really good. And information about that should be up just around the first of the year. The new sparklings have also come in, and we are selling a gift box that includes all three of them, as well as four little champagne glasses for under $50.
Nice.
So that great one's idea. Really great. And then we're also introducing a box of Saperavi Reserve, where you can get it as a collective for Valentine's Day at a significantly cheaper rate than what we normally offer it. It's essentially a buy two, get one free for our best wine.
Rounding out here, any passions outside of, you know, work or, you know, selling wine around the country?
Well, you know, one of the things we also did, as I mentioned, Barry's my partner. He's actually a retired firefighter paramedic, and I'm a veteran, and we formed the Silk Road Wine Foundation that helps support veterans and first responders. We work with Tunnel to Towers from the, you know, that's out of New York, but they have a Florida division that we support. We had a couple of galas. We raised over close to $100,000 and supported them for a couple of years. And we've gotten so crazy busy this year that we just didn't have enough manpower to organize another gala this year. But we will be doing some more and giving back to veterans and first responders.
Very cool. Rise of natural wine and skin contact wine as trends for the American palate.
I mean, we touched on that a little bit. I think that we can mention how it's probably going to change and grow, right? Like, I don't think that that's going away. While orange wine and natural wine has become a trend in the big cities, we're definitely starting to see it leak into other places. And typically what happens is the big cities gets it, and then all those people spread out or migrate to other parts of the country that are less expensive eventually, and then all of the trends find their way to the other places. And I think that we're on the precipice of Georgian wine doing that. We've focused a lot of our effort in places like Florida and Texas, as opposed to New York and California. But all of that, I think, will just kind of spread and merge together in one big thing as it culminates. And I hopefully by this time next year, everyone will know what Georgian wine is.
And yeah, I believe it's going to happen. I truly think, we're finally getting to that point where, mm-hmm. you know, those things like 60 Minutes that came out, they have made a huge, difference. Even we saw a major, boost in our orders, online after that. And it's working. People are interested. They want to take that journey and learn more about something so ancient yet so, you know, new to the United States. And, you know, George, this is kind of off topic, but Georgian wine to Georgians means everything. You know, when I say that,
off topic at all.
When I say that, it's they have, their culture is intertwined with wine. And just a simple kind of thing I want to mention is Georgia is one of the first nations, one of to become Christian in as a nation, following Armenia. And, you know, you can see the cross over here. This is actually a Georgian cross that is shaped very differently from what, you know, most crosses are, right? And what happened was there was a Saint Nino that converted the king and queen of Georgia to Christianity by performing miracles and stuff. And she made the first cross out of the grapevine. And that's one of the reasons it's not like that. So, and no she cut way. Her hair, she tied the two lines together cool. and made the first Georgian cross.
That is awesome. Yeah.
So Saint Nino, her cross is huge and to Georgian culture. And, you know, that's why one of the things that vine is so important. And, you know, there's other stories where, you know, when Georgia was attacked by the Persian king, they saw these people. They're like, what are they doing? You know, how are they so crazy fighting, you know, against us? And the generals were telling, well, they drink this crazy juice called wine, and that's what makes them wild. So
you think you could have tried that in the army? You know, just like had some wine, you guys would have won all the battles.
Yeah. But they, so the Persian king is like, okay, uproot all these wines. You know, I don't want to see any, you know, I don't want them drinking this stuff. And what the spouses started doing was in their like vests, they would have this wine. They would have seeds in them. So anytime a Georgian soldier would die on the battlefield, another vine yeah. would grow from there. So they, that's that those kinds of stories and traditions and are, you know, intertwined with the culture. And like I said, they you know, every first toast is always to God, to thanking Him for everything we have. And because there's another story, it's also kind of funny. When God was giving out land, when He created earth, He was giving out land to all different nations. On the first day, you know, and then on the last day, the Georgians show up and He says, well, where are you? I already gave all the land out to everybody. And the Georgians are like, well, we were drinking to you this whole time. We're toasting to you. And that's why we didn't make it. And He says, well, since you did me such honor of toasting to me and drinking to me, I saved a little piece of land for myself, which I'm going to
give to you. Oh, that's funny.
So that's how Georgians got Georgia. I love
this history. These history lessons, it's so much fun. I love it. That's really cool. They did mention some of the on the 60 Minute documentary too, which is really interesting. Such a rich culture that goes back so many thousands of years. I know my cousin, my wife's cousin, has spent some time in Georgia. And he's like, yeah, this is the birthplace of wine. I'm like, what are you talking about, man? I've never heard that before. You know, and I just feel so stupid. But he's like, oh my gosh, he explained it just like that, in the sense that it's just such a part of their culture. They have a lot of pride. And you know, they all kind of make their own wines, as you mentioned. They're, you know, in their gardens, in their backyards. And it's just so intertwined with who they are. And they're so proud of, from what I gathered from my cousin, that they're just so proud that they want to share, they want you to taste. And it's kind of part of their culture to eat and drink with them. And they're prideful in sharing on what that means to them, to others. And so I thought that was extraordinary. I think that's very special, because it's not, certainly not, our culture here. So, I thought it was fascinating just to hear his version of going over there and experiencing, you know, what it's like to live there and how people embrace others.
We'll have to go and do we'll have to do one in Georgia.
Yeah, no, I'll go anytime. Yeah, I would love to go experience it and see it. The pictures, you know, are amazing. It just looks like such a beautiful, a very old preserved, wonderful culture. And they talk about the different types of foods that are offered there too, because of the different invasions over the thousands of years and different cultures that have lived there. Kind of reminds me of the Sicilian, you know, history, where they've been conquered up and down and sideways and backwards and have all this collection of different flavors that they've kind of combined into their own, which is really fascinating and unique. Legacy of Perts Alexander. I don't want to say his name and make myself too embarrassed. Shabadazi.
Well, I think Keaton actually did some research on him, so I'll let him lead, and then maybe I'll add some things to it.
Sure. So this is just another interesting historical point. It was in the 1800s that Prince Alexander, he was really obsessed with the European parties of the day. He thought they were so cool. And he wanted to throw parties that were as cool as those Europeans. So he started to invite winemakers from all over to come teach the process there in his Sinindali estate. Sinindali is another appellation that we have one of our wines named after. And it's a blend that is still made to this day. And it's really at that point that the modern winemaking style started to come into Georgia. And so that, when compounded with the Russian occupation, which forced the intensity of those productions and streamlined them, is how we get a very active and prevalent modern European style of winemaking in Georgia today, despite the fact that they're so renowned for the ancestral Quevri winemaking.
And yeah, I'll add to it that he's the one that kind of brought that concept of bottling wine in Georgia. Prior to that, like, you know, they had the Quevris and they would drink out of the Quevris. But standardized and, you know, kind of brought this European thing of aging the wines in their old barrels and bottling it. So,
okay. So he's, yeah, kind of took your wine industry to the next level on import, exporting, because you can't really export a Quervy.
You can certainly try.
Yeah.
And there has been a purchase order for Quevris from the United States, even during the communist time. There was an American that wanted to buy Quevris and bring them to the United States. And then the Soviet Union fell apart and the kind of things went sideways and it never happened. So, but our Quevri wines are made in those Quevris that were actually designated for the United States.
So do you have your own winery over there where you source the different grapes, and then you have a winemaking team that kind of ages them and puts them together, labels them, that kind of thing? Or
no, we work with a few different wineries that we visited quite a lot of wineries, and we handpicked some of the best winemaking processes, top quality wine. At the same time, you know, their facilities, professional team, winemakers, everything is top notch. Where we feel comfortable always having the same good quality wine, year in, year out. So we have a handful of wineries we work with that specialize, like Quevri wines come from just a whoever specific
Twins wine house. Yeah.
And we actually have co-label our wines with their brand as well to show them.
And you can see there are two Cuevas, which are makes them twins.
Nice.
So it's a two twin actually they have old history of winemaking. And then when the communists came, their the ancestor had to flee, but they came back and they they have the original Cuevas that they had for 100 years or so or more. So we choose like the gems of Georgia to bring the best wine to the United States.
No, thank you for doing that. It's they're awesome. So in closing, I just have one more thing, and I want a perspective from a person from Georgia. Is there a tug and war at all with Armenia and Georgia because of some of the evidence that could have been in both? Or is it just hands down, everybody knows in this that it's Georgia? Because I feel like after the media and things I've read, it's like hands down Georgia.
So, Armenians will claim that they're the first ones. And, for me, I'm biased because I was born in Georgia. But at the same time, my last name is Armenian, so my ancestors are Armenian. So I kind of feel for both of them. But I think the UNESCO World Heritage has identified Georgia as the birthplace of wine. They have the British Museum of History and other American universities found these clay vessels that had seeds in them, the wine residue on them, and they backdated them to 6,700 BC. So to this day, nobody has found any other Cuevas that has that, the seeds and the wine in it that dates that far back. So I think for now, Georgia holds the record.
Until further evidence is found.
Yeah. I mean, they're border each other, and exactly. Armenia also have Armenia has great wines, and they have an amazing pomegranate wine, which is very special, and we're going to be also bringing in.
Sneak peek there, spoilers. Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
We may be getting a Armenian pomegranate wine very soon.
Nice. Well, that's exciting. More innovation. Yeah. Now, do they use similar techniques in Armenia that you use in Georgia, or are they different?
They have a different process. The pomegranate wine requires a certain system of cooling I was introduced to it once, and it was kind of very fast introduction, so I didn't take notes. But it's a little bit of different process how they treat pomegranate wine.
And do they use Cuevas and stuff for their winemaking?
As much as y'all do in
Georgia?
Well, but I don't know much about Armenian wine when it comes to Cuevas. I have tried Armenian wine, and they have some of their indigenous grape varietals, like one of the big names is Areni. And they have pretty good quality, delicious wine. And actually in some of them, they also use Georgian grape varietals as a blend to add to their wine. So the winemaking process is very connected in that sense. Yeah. But they're different as well.
Well, more to discover then. More to learn.
Absolutely.
Shout out your website or anything.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, please visit www.silkroadwines.com or check us out on Instagram at instagram.com/silkroadwines. You can also type Silk Road Wine into Google and we'll probably show up. Yeah, there's a lot of really exciting stuff happen. Oh, and we're about to introduce a new email listserv. And if you sign up for that, you'll receive a discount percentage on your next order of 10%. Which is very cool. Lots of exciting stuff coming out. I would highly suggest checking out the website, subscribing in, because things are going to be coming out every day for the next couple of weeks. Very, very exciting stuff.
Thank you both so much. I'm so excited for where you guys are at and where you're headed. It's super exciting. Keep me posted. Stay in touch. And hopefully we'll get to meet soon.
Thank you so much. Pleasure meeting you. Pleasure being with you. It was an awesome interview. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Great. And, likewise. So fun.
Doug also sends his best. He wanted to make sure that he could say hi to you.
Oh, yes. Hi, Doug. Yes, he's the one that connected us. I've known Doug for 25, I don't know. Almost as long as I've been in the business, actually. He's a great guy. Worked with him a couple of different times and yeah, I'm so glad he connected us. So that's fantastic. With that, I will wave goodbye until next time. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
This week's episode was produced by Fedora J Productions.